Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and in case you haven't heard yet, secretive groups known as 501c4s are now outspending super PACs. ProPublica has an amazing investigative report out today that shows how today's biggest force in anonymous political donations may be tricking the IRS into thinking they are tax-exempt social welfare organizations when they are really partisan attack groups. If there's one trend you should understand about this year's election, it is probably this. Kim Barker, reporter from ProPublica, joins us now. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much for having me.
So is the biggest difference between a 501c4 and a super PAC that the PACs must disclose the names of their donors while you can give anonymously to 501c4s, and that 501c4s are tax exempt because they're supposed to be social welfare organizations, not primarily political ones?
Yeah, those are the two major differences. Although these C4s, and this is where it gets very complicated, are supposed to pay taxes on their political expenditures. There are ways to get around that as well. But those are the two major differences, tax exempt, and they don't have to disclose their donors.
The numbers in your article are that super PACs, as of last week, spent $56 million on this year's election cycle. 501c4s, substantially more, $71 million. So is money shifting to these groups because the donors can remain anonymous and because they can get tax deductions for their secret largesse?
Interestingly, if you look at the 2010 election, you see the same trend, that these C4 groups actually outspent the super PACs. So you'd have to, as these groups tell me, you'd have to ask the donors why they want to give to the C4 groups as opposed to the super PACs. Of course, I can't ask the donors because I don't know who the donors are. But I would imagine that anonymity is the benefit of giving to a super PAC or giving to a C4 group versus a super PAC. You can give and nobody knows that you're giving. And corporations have had issues with giving and spending directly on political campaigns and getting a backlash from groups that don't like the way they're spending. And the theory goes that a lot of the groups giving to these particular C4 groups are corporations or other folks that don't want anybody to know that they're giving.
So listeners, anything you always wanted to ask about a 501c4 but had no one to ask, Kim Barker from ProPublica is here. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And if this is the first you're hearing about 501c4s, listen up. So the heart of your investigation, as I read it, is that 501c4s on both the left and right may be tricking the IRS into believing that they are social welfare organizations when they're really political action groups working to elect candidates. For example, you write about former Republican Senator Norm Coleman's group, the American Future Fund, which you say mailed its application to the IRS, checking no on the box for whether they plan to engage in politics. But then what have they been doing, according to other documents?
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that's not Norm Coleman's group. He's got a different group called American Action Network. The American Future Fund, however, the very day it mailed in its application to the IRS, March 18th, 2008, uploaded an ad praising Senator Norm Coleman. On its application said, no, we're not going to be involved in politics at all. Claimed spending more than $8.6 million in 2010 on the elections. One of the most successful and prolific C4 groups there is out there on elections.
So if this group reported more than $8 million in political expenditures, is that to the IRS that they reported it?
They reported that to the IRS, yes. They reported, I believe, more than 9.5, including there are two different kinds of ads that have to be reported to the FEC. They reported more than that to the FEC, but they reported 8.6 to the IRS.
So why don't they lose their tax-exempt status if they're not supposed to be primarily political in nature?
You'd have to talk to the IRS about that. They're not talking to me about it. I mean, there are rumors out there, and there's in fact been a work plan that was issued saying that the IRS is looking at these groups harder this year, the ones specifically that have been overly political. And you can see from some of their enforcement actions that they seem to be going after certain small groups that are considered to be benefiting a small group of politicians or a political party rather than the public at large. But is this going to change anything before this election? That is the real question.
probably not before this election.
I would have to say most folks I talk to are doubtful.
You write about a liberal group called America's Families First as an example of how some of these groups try to hide the fact that they're political by funding other organizations rather than spending the money on politics directly. In their case, you write that 70% of their expenditures were actually grants to five other social welfare nonprofits, but most of those groups, in turn, spent heavily on supporting Democratic candidates and opposing Republicans. Does the IRS investigate something like that as possible, I don't know what the technical term is, money laundering for the purpose of tax evasion or whatever?
Well, you know, and I don't know. I don't know. Of course, these groups are allowed to give other grants and to count that as social welfare. That's one of the things that I found interesting is that you could actually have, I mean, you can't quite call it a shell organization, although other people have, but groups that are set up and they give most of their money out to the other C4 groups. And this is for one of two reasons that we could determine. Number one was to be able to count that as social welfare activity, giving out grants. And the other reason was to further give another layer in between the money and the original donors. So therefore, say the FEC, and here it gets complicated here again, say the FEC were to say, you've got to list all your donors for these ads. They're trying to do this with a certain kind of ad this year. List your major donors. Well, what happens if you can say, well, I got it from another group? You know, so therefore, if you're, you know, the Defenders of Wildlife Action Fund, you can say, yes, America's Families First helped me pay for this ad, and they gave me this much money toward this ad. Still, it leaves the American voter with no idea who is really behind this and what is really behind this ad. I mean, because a lot of these groups, they have names that are so vague and unobjectionable. I mean, who's going to really object to a group called America's Families First or American Future Fund? Everybody wants to have a family. Everybody, you know, most people do. And everybody
and
would like the idea
future.
Of, you know, America having a future. So you've got these ads that come out in the very end. It very quickly says, you know, paid for by American Action Network or paid for by, you know, Citizens for Strength and Security Action Fund. And that's what you're left with as a voter.
I love these names. Here's another one you write about. The Center for Individual Freedom.
Who doesn't want freedom?
Right. So, but here's the argument that you cite that the Center for American Freedom makes to keep their tax-exempt status, that the ads they're paying for are issue ads, not election ads. So you say they spent more than $2 million on ads criticizing Democrats in 10 congressional districts during the 2010 election cycle, but they told the IRS they spent nothing on elections. Rather, they spent it on education or legislative activities.
Sure, yes.
And we've all seen ads like this, like, tell Chuck Schumer to stop hurting our country and vote for such and such an act. Where's the line?
Right. Well, there is no line. I mean, there's a line as far as the FEC goes. The FEC line is this. If you directly say whether to vote for or against somebody, so you say vote for Chuck Schumer or vote against Chuck Schumer, then that ad is called an independent expenditure, and that has to be reported as such to the FEC. And that's generally considered, everybody says, you got to report that to the IRS as political spending. But there are the vague ads, these ads called electioneering communications or issue ads that do what you were saying, you know, call Chuck Schumer, tell him he's horrible, call Chuck Schumer, tell him to stop killing jobs, all these sort of things. Those are called electioneering communications or issue ads, and these are the ads that these groups tend to report to the IRS as education, because you're educating people, right? You're telling them, you know, tell this person how bad they are. Call them, tell them how bad they are. And what's interesting is the IRS doesn't view political ads the same way. They're very much of the, if it walks like a political ad, if it talks like a political ad, then it's a political ad. They don't really care how you report that ad to the FEC. They care whether a common, you know, your average person would see this as a political ad, whether they would see this as a political ad, and how it fits in with a group's other spending. And so if you're doing just these kind of ads, if they're kind of like the sham issue ads that aren't really about an issue that the group has any concern about,
they're really targeting a candidate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the question. And so we're actually doing something on our website where we're running some of these ads to say, hey, you tell us what you think. You know, what do you think? Do you think this is political? Do you think this is not political?
So listeners, you determine where the line is. We've linked to this on our site, so you can go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, and you can get to ProPublica's page or go right there to see some of these ads. Kim Barker from ProPublica, talking about her investigative report on the secretive groups known as 501c4s that are now outspending super PACs and that don't have to disclose the name of their donors and get tax exemptions for not disclosing them to boot. 212-433-WNYC and John in Bradley Beach. You're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. My understanding is that C4s have been around for a long time, and I know traditionally they often did things like they were partnered with the C3. For example, Greenpeace would take your donation and use it for education and research unless you wanted this to go towards getting a law passed. It would go to their C4 that was trying to get a law passed in D.C., and therefore it would not be tax deductible, but your donation to the C3 would be because it had a more charitable or educational nature. So my question is, what's changed, I sound like recently, where the C4s, they're actually trying to, they're tax exempt as well, and this money's turned into real political spending, not just kind of straight up lobbying to get a law passed.
Right, right. There have been a couple things that have changed, and these groups have always, well, not always, but they've been involved in politics in the past, running these kind of issue ads. But it was really after Citizens United in early 2010 where you had a sense that all the gloves were off. They could do whatever they wanted, and you had more of a rush to sort of pair up these groups with super PACs. And run these kind of ads. But it gets even more complicated than Citizens United because there was actually a Supreme Court decision a couple of years earlier involving Wisconsin Wisconsin Right to Life that enabled these groups to be able to such as businesses and unions to actually be able to spend on electioneering communications in some sort of way. And that really is what started changing the idea of nonprofits being able to spend more on these electioneering communication ads and not necessarily have to report their donors. It gets very complicated. It's been a couple of court decisions that have started changing things. But really, if you look at it now, you're to the point with after Citizens United that everybody just started saying, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to form groups that are specifically for politics. And that's what that's going to be okay.
And did Citizens United unleash these C4s in some kind of new way, or was there already anonymous and tax deductible donation going on to these groups before that?
There was already. It already was happening. But what Citizens United really did is it said, hey, corporations and unions, you have a right of free speech as well. So you can spend on political ads. And that included nonprofit corporations such as C4s. But it meant that C4s could – they felt more comfortable spending directly on these independent expenditure ads, these more of these direct ads. And they felt more comfortable buying more of these so-called electioneering ads, communication ads, or these issue ads outside of the time period of reporting to the FEC. And it really just gave, as Sheila Krumholz told me from the Center for Responsive Politics, it just sounded the starting gun for these groups to just go. And until the IRS says, okay, you know what, this is not the way these groups are supposed to work, you cannot do this, you're actually a political committee, not a C4, then it's more like, you know, we're just going to keep doing this until you tell us not to.
And here's an example of how comfortable they feel, according to your article. Casino magnate Sheldon Adelson's group, the Republican Jewish Coalition. Adelson is this year's biggest political spender, as far as we know. You describe a scene in which people at a meeting of the group are encouraged, pretty explicitly, it sounds like, to give money to help elect Romney and are told they can do so anonymously. How blatant was that pitch?
That was pretty blatant.
How do you know?
You described it. I was in the audience, and I was kind of, you know, I felt like, wow, this is exactly what I was told was happening, and I'm here watching it because I'm there at this luncheon for a group, the Republican Jewish Coalition. It's been a social welfare nonprofit since 1985. Then it was called the National Jewish Coalition. It really sort of shows the evolution of these groups. You know, starts out National Jewish Coalition saying it's not going to spend money on politics, eventually changes its name to Republican Jewish Coalition, starts spending money on politics, and there they are at this law firm. Basically saying, you know, making a pitch, saying, here are a couple ads we've run already. This is the most important election in our history. give to this plan.
And
give to this plan.
Their title doesn't hide what they are. They're
exactly.
The Republican Jewish Coalition.
Yeah.
But is it somehow illegal, potentially, to be soliciting money specifically to help elect a candidate? Is that the point?
It's not illegal to specifically solicit money to help a candidate like that. But where it gets down to it is whether they're going to have to report the money they raise with that plan, the donors to those particular ads. And everybody I've talked to says, yeah, you're going to have to disclose those donors. And we're going to see what they actually end up doing, whether they disclose those donors. Because anytime anybody gives specifically to a purpose of to an ad, they're theoretically supposed to be disclosed. And the issue here, and I believe this is what the IRS is looking at least, this is what our reporting has shown, that they're looking to see whether these groups benefit the public at large, the community as a whole, or whether they're specifically benefiting a political party or a small group of people. And I think you could make the argument with some of these groups that they are just about benefiting a specific political party on both sides of the aisle.
Kim Barker from ProPublica talking about her investigative report on 501c4s, supposed social welfare organizations being political and not having to disclose their donors because they're listed as social welfare organizations. And Paul in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I do have a question for the panel today.
It's a panel of one, but that's okay.
Are there other ways to donate anonymously? Are there other ways to donate and have tax exemption? What is the main attraction of these political groups to a C4 donation? Is it anonymity? Is it tax exemption? Is it donation limits?
Great question, Paul. Thank you. And you see, Kim, you're so powerful in your presentation that he thinks you're a whole panel.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I'll
start changing the tone of my voice so I seem like more than one person. You can also if you can donate anonymously to a 501c6 organization, which is a trade association. But, you know, if you're the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you're taking donations from different companies, different corporations. It's not as if everybody goes into those particular organizations. C4s are very flexible because you can set them up fairly quickly. You don't even have to apply to the IRS and be recognized to be able to do this. So they're very nimble. You can do it based on almost any issue out there, and there hasn't been a real sort of sense that of policing these groups or this particular issue. I mean, you look at the IRS at large. What is their mission? Their mission is essentially to collect revenue, which means a lot of times going after corporations, going after, you know, rich folks who aren't paying their taxes, as opposed to going after C4 groups that sort of pop in and out of existence. And they might not even know about these groups until they file a tax return a couple years after the election. And by that time, they might already be defunct.
We just have a couple of minutes left. A few things real quick. We've talked about some of the pro-Democratic and pro-Republican groups that you investigated. You made a point of saying this goes on both sides of the aisle. But your article includes an astounding statistic that as of last week, liberal groups had spent about $1.5 million on 501c4s, while the ones controlled by Karl Rove and the Koch brothers alone on the Republican side spent about $60 million.
Right.
60-1? Is that a misprint?
That is not a misprint. No, those are estimates actually from this group called Kantar Media's Campaign Media Analysis Group. And they've taken a look at, surveyed all the ads that are running in the presidential campaign on TV stations. So it is
why
stunning.
That disparity? Why are the Democrats fighting with this hand tied behind their backs?
I don't think they are trying to fight with that hand tied behind their backs. And in fact, they're not talking to me. Nobody's really talking to me about that difference. But, you know, you've got groups that have been specifically started on the Democrat side to take anonymous money. Priorities USA, in fact, is such a group, which is paired up with Priorities USA Action, the super PAC.
That's the pro-health reform group.
Well, no, that's pro-Obama specifically.
Oh, that's just pro-Obama.
Yeah,
oh, I was thinking of a different one.
You were thinking
okay.
of, yeah, probably America's Families First or,
yeah.
I don't know, one of those different groups. But you've got these groups that are out there. They're ready to take money, but either they haven't raised much much money so far, or they're saving all their money to spend right before the election. I mean, you've got an interesting point here. If you're a business or if you're a person and you donate, say, $1 million to Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch brothers group, or $1 million to, say, you know, Crossroads GPS, which is Karl Rove's group, that gives you entree in with either the Koch brothers or Karl Rove, which is a pretty powerful thing. But you give to one of these Democratic groups and, you know, you get in with no offense to Bill Burton or Sean Sweeney, but they're former aides of Obama. Nobody necessarily even knows who they are. It's not like that really gets you anything. And I think that is a crucial point of this. The folks that donate to these groups are not going to be known to you and me. They're not going to be known to the American voter, but the groups themselves are going to know. And you can bet whoever's going to be elected with the help of that money is going to have some idea. And that's the important point here.
So I guess if anything comes of your article, it would be more pressure on the IRS to look more closely at which of these groups is actually fudging their status for tax exemption purposes and for anonymity of donors purposes.
Yeah. I mean, most definitely. And obviously, you'd like to see Congress take another look at its Disclose Act and the whole idea that of how exactly campaign finance is handled. And I think it's a debate we haven't really had as a public. I think that there's this assumption that it's just business as usual and a cynicism about campaign finance. And I do think it's something that we should be talking about as a nation. Maybe this is fine. Maybe it's okay.
But we should at least have the conversation.
Absolutely.
So thank you for having some of it here. Kim Barker, ProPublica reporter. You can read her latest investigation into the campaign finance system at ProPublica.org. Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we have the Daily News editorial board chairman Arthur Brown on the problems with New York City public housing projects that they've been chronicling. Stay with us.